Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph dated Thursday, March 5th, 2020. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Numbed, Quiet, Aviation Community Mourns Three Men Lost in I-55 Plane Crash, by Kelsey Watznauer. Lincoln. As investigators continue to search for the cause of a fatal plane crash outside Lincoln, authorities on Wednesday released identities of the three men who were killed. The Illinois State Police said those killed were pilot Mitchell W. Jansen, 22, of Princeville, and passengers Matthew Hansen, 33, of Pulaski, Wisconsin, and Kevin Chapman, 30, of Urbana. The four-seat, single-engine Cessna 172 crashed into southbound lanes of Interstate 55 on the west side of Lincoln, near where the freeway crosses State Routes 10 and 121, at 8:49 a.m. Tuesday. The National Transportation Safety Board is leading the investigation, but has not released information about where the plane was going or the cause of the crash. On Wednesday, the state police said the aircraft had departed from Central Illinois Regional Airport in Bloomington. Jansen's Facebook page identifies him as a pilot for Air Wisconsin and as a flight instructor for Synergy Flight Center in Bloomington. Synergy, at 2823 East Empire Street, offers flight training, aircraft maintenance, and hangar space near the Bloomington Airport. Officials would not comment about the crash. Jansen graduated from Princeville High School in 2015 and from Bradley University, where he was a starting pitcher on the baseball team, in 2019. As a senior, he led all NCAA Division I pitchers in earned run average for several weeks before ending the season 25th, with the third-best season ERA in the metal bat era at Bradley, according to Bradley University Athletics. Bradley University Athletics on Facebook posted, "Son, brother, teammate, and friend, the entire Bradley community shares its condolences with Mitch's family, friends, and teammates." Jansen moonlighted as a commercial charter jet pilot during this final 2 years of college, becoming the youngest pilot in the world to fly a specific twin-engine jet. He purchased his own plane in 2018, according to Bradley University Athletics. John Morgan of Bloomington, who has been flying professionally for more than 40 years, met Jansen as part of the aviation community, but did not know him personally. "He carried himself very well as a professional," he said of the young pilot. Passenger Chapman was an ecologist with Schoner Environmental Incorporated, which has an office in Champaign. He earned his master's degree from Utah State University in 2016, working as a graduate student researcher in the Fish Ecology Lab and studying ecology and watershed sciences. Hansen, the other passenger, lived in a small village outside Green Bay, Wisconsin. The Central Illinois aviation community on Wednesday was still reeling from the shock of what happened. "I think at first there is a sense of respect and numbness where we don't try to talk or speculate about what happened," Morgan said. The region is home to several small flying clubs and private pilots. Morgan said Wednesday that the Brotherhood of Aviation Enthusiasts is numbed and quiet. Authorities continue to examine wreckage and records, with the Federal Aviation Administration and NTSB leading the investigation. When more information is revealed, Morgan said the aviation community will be able to learn. "We examine ourselves, what we can do better as an industry, what we can do better as professional pilots," he said. "And that's really all we can do, is learn and go on." Stephen Barnes, safety officer for the Flying 20 Club in Springfield, hopes the NTSB can shed light on it. "It definitely makes us think. When we hear things like that, everyone reaches out to pilots they know, said Barnes, a certified private pilot since 2003. We definitely look out for each other. The Springfield aviation community recently suffered its own loss when a small private plane crashed near Springfield. In January, former Springfield Mayor Frank Edwards, Sangamon County Coroner Cinda Edwards, and Glen Arm resident John Evans were killed when their twin-engine Piper Aerostar went down in an unincorporated area of Sangamon County after taking off from Sarasota-Braden International Airport in Florida. When tragedies like this happen, you always kind of place yourselves in the family's shoes, Morgan said. I just can't imagine the parents, the siblings, the loved ones who have lost such a young life. After decades of experience, Morgan has had the opportunity to watch pilots come up in the industry, and many begin as flight instructors like Jansen. A lot of us start out as flight instructors ourselves, and there's a sense of pride in knowing we had a part in someone else's professional development, he said. Barnes said working hard to earn certification and keep it creates a sense of camaraderie among pilots. It's a small fraction of people that do fly, so when you do become a part of that community, there's a kinship there, Barnes said. The next story is headlined, State Farm Restricts Travel Because of Outbreak. Major employers in Twin Cities look to CDC for guidance. By Lenore Sabota. Bloomington. The coronavirus outbreak is leading to some travel restrictions and advisories for Bloomington Normal companies, including State Farm, which is restricting all non-essential business travel through March. We believe this step will help keep our associates healthy and limit exposure across the country, said State Farm spokeswoman Gina Morse Fisher. Country Financial has not restricted business travel at this time, but spokesman Chris Stroich said, we are allowing employees to decide whether to postpone or cancel their travel plans. Illinois State University earlier restricted travel to countries listed at Level 2 or above by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, and has strongly recommended that students studying abroad in Italy and Japan return home. State Farm's action was called precautionary by Morse Fisher, who said, we want to do everything we can to keep our employees safe and serve our customers. The restrictions will not apply to catastrophe responses, such as the Nashville tornado, she said. In a business like ours, our response to a catastrophe like the devastation in Nashville is essential, said Morse Fisher. We have to respond to make sure our team is there to help customers. She added, what we're particularly talking about is domestic travel, but it would apply to any international travel, too. She said the company is monitoring conditions and will adjust its actions as needed. Stroich said country also is closely monitoring the situation and following the guidance of trusted resources such as the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and continuing to evaluate its plans. Rivian Automotive has asked employees company-wide to adhere to the CDC advisory to limit travel to certain countries, said Zach Dietmeyer, communication manager for Rivian's Normal production facility. While vehicle production isn't expected to begin there until late this year, the facility employs about 225 people. CDC has urged people to avoid traveling to countries hard hit by coronavirus, including China, Iran, South Korea, and Italy. This is not an outright ban, Dietmeyer said. We are encouraging employees, if at all possible, to avoid countries listed in the government advisory. We haven't limited domestic travel at this point, he said. For employees who need to travel to those countries for personal reasons, Rivian may ask them, when they return, to work from home for 7 to 14 days, Dietmeyer said. Meanwhile, Rivian is providing more soap and hand sanitizer at all its locations, he said. State Farm has been communicating with employees about ways to protect themselves from not only coronavirus, but flu and other illnesses. We are also cleaning common surfaces more frequently, such as door handles, elevator buttons, escalator rails, vending machine fronts, and bathroom surfaces, said Morse Fisher. Stroich said, country also has taken extra precautions to our corporate offices to minimize the spread of germs. And here is a related national story entitled, U.S. Coronavirus Deaths Hit 11, by the Associated Press. Seattle. The U.S. death toll from the coronavirus climbed to 11 on Wednesday, with a patient dying in California, the first reported fatality outside Washington state, as federal authorities announced an investigation of the Seattle area nursing home where most of the victims were stricken. Officials in California's Placer County, near Sacramento, said an elderly person who tested positive after returning from a San Francisco to Mexico cruise had died. The victim had underlying health problems, authorities said. Washington also announced another death, bringing its total to 10. Most of those who died were residents of Life Care Center, a nursing home in Kirkland, a suburb east of Seattle. At least 39 cases have been reported in the Seattle area, where researchers say the virus may have been circulating undetected for weeks. After California's first fatality, Governor Gavin Newsom on Wednesday declared a state of emergency due to the threat of the new virus. In the nation's capital, the Democratic-controlled House passed an $8.3 billion measure Wednesday to battle the outbreak. The swift and sweeping bipartisan vote was a relative rarity in a polarized Washington and came just 9 days after the president outlined a $2.5 billion plan that both Trump's GOP allies and Democratic critics said was insufficient. The 415-2 vote came after House Speaker Nancy Pelosi beat a tactical retreat on vaccine price guarantees and followed a debate that lasted only a few minutes. Here's a story entitled, Worship Safety Event Set. Feds, local officials, clergy, to talk of hate crimes, security. By Pantograph staff. Normal. Law enforcement and faith leaders will focus on protecting places of worship during a forum planned 12:30 to 4:30 p.m. March 20th at Epiphany Catholic Church, 1000 East College Avenue. The focus is on preventing and responding to hate crimes against places of worship. The forum will be led by the U.S. Department of Justice Community Relations Service and is hosted by the City of Bloomington, Town of Normal, McLean County State's Attorney's Office, McLean County Sheriff's Office, and Epiphany Catholic Church. The forum is open to the public, but reservations are due by March 18th. At https://usaoilctraining.org/protected-places-of-worship-forum. Topics will include overview of religious hate crimes, preventing and responding to active shooter situations, securing houses of worship, and an interfaith panel discussion protecting places of worship. Invited speakers include Monsignor Eric Powell, Epiphany Catholic Church, McLean County Board Chairman John McIntyre, Mayors Terry Renner and Chris Coos, U.S. Attorney John Millhiser, McLean County State's Attorney Don Knapp, First Assistant U.S. Attorney Douglas Quivy, University of Illinois Emergency Management Coordinator Sherry Wooten, and representatives of the FBI, Bloomington and Normal Police Departments, and the McLean County Sheriff's Office. The next article is entitled Creativity Center Work to Start. $506,000 for new roof, HVAC. $5 million fund drive still underway. By Maria Nagel. Bloomington. Long-awaited repairs at the city-owned Creativity Center are expected to begin at the end of this month. The building's roof will be replaced and a new heating, ventilation, and air conditioning system installed, and work is scheduled for completion by October, said Jay Tetzloff, who is Bloomington Parks, Recreation, and Cultural Arts Department oversees both the center and the nearby Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. I am ecstatic to be where we are with this project, said Vicki Tilton, president of the Friends of the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts, a nonprofit that raises money for renovations and an endowment fund to provide continuing revenue for the center and BCPA. There are people with the Friends who have been working on this for around 15 years, so this moving ahead is a really big deal. We are very excited. When completed, the Creativity Center will showcase a black box theater, multi-use classrooms, a dance studio, music studios, a recording studio, office space for BCPA staff and local arts organizations, and gallery space for local artists. In December, the City Council awarded a contract to Henson Robinson Company of Springfield to repair the 32,000 square foot former medical office building located across Locust Street from the BCPA, just north of downtown Bloomington. It's $506,000, which is considerably less than what we had projected initially, said Tetzloff. So we were thrilled when we opened that bid. The project is being paid for with funds that were privately raised and is really the first step of us working inside, he added. There won't be city dollars going into the Creativity Center from a construction perspective. It will be purely private dollars. The city purchased the BCPA and Creativity Center buildings in 2003. The city allocated about $1.7 million annually from sales tax receipts to pay for bonds that allowed for the 2006 renovation of the BCPA, formerly the Scottish Rite Temple. The Creativity Center, 107 East Chestnut Street, was slated at the time for $5.2 million in renovations. The work was to be paid with donations and grants, but fundraising efforts languished. In April 2019, the Friends Group launched a $5 million capital campaign to jumpstart renovations of the Creativity Center. About $1 million raised during the BCPA capital campaign in 2005 will be used for the roof and HVAC systems. About $3 million from the current capital campaign is earmarked for the interior renovations, with the campaign expected to be fully funded by 2024. Another $1 million will be used to purchase equipment and furnishings, said Tilton. The timing for the completion of those renovations all comes down to funding, said Tetzloff. In October 2016, the City Council determined the Creativity Center should move forward with private money paying for building renovations and repairs, with the city paying operational costs, including janitorial services and building maintenance. I think it's so invigorating and inspiring to work with those people, like the Friends Group, who want to see these projects get done, who help shape the direction and provide community input, said City Communications Manager Nora Dukowitz. I think that's invaluable. And here is some Illinois state news in a story entitled GOP calls for fixing Illinois FOID process. By Jerry Nowicki. Springfield. Republican lawmakers are calling to abolish the state's firearm owner's identification card requirement, or at least to install fixes to expedite the Illinois State Police's handling of a backlog of applications that is leaving gun owners in a state of uncertainty. My office receives 3 to 5 calls almost every day now with FOID delay concerns. Representative Charlie Meyer, Republican of Oakville, said at a Capitol News conference Wednesday. Wherever I go, I'm contacted by people that walk up to me. I have a problem with my FOID card. You have to explain the process, and you tell them that you know you're not the only one that's 2, 3, or 4 months behind. There's many more. Meyer and some of his fellow Republican House members said their offices have been inundated by callers who have had issues with FOID. They said the delay in FOID card processing has left law-abiding gun owners in the lurch as they await renewals, and 2 constituents who experienced delays shared their stories at the news conference Wednesday as well. You have several problems here, said Representative Michael Marin, Republican of 50. The first thing is that you are taking law-abiding citizens who are trying to exercise their constitutional right to bear arms, and you're creating a problem for them being compliant with the state law. The lawmakers said nearly $30 million in funding was swept from the ISP's coffers to the state's General Revenue Fund from fiscal years 2015 to 2019, including more than $13 million from the Firearm Services Fund, which goes to FOID administration. An FOID card costs $10 and must be renewed every 10 years. Of that fee, $6 goes to the Wildlife and Fish Fund, $3 to the Firearm Services Fund, and $1 to the State Police Services Fund. Representative Patrick Windhorst, a Metropolis Republican who represents all or parts of the state's southernmost 11 counties, said his priority is abolishing FOID card requirements in the state, and he noted there are court challenges to the FOID card's constitutionality. Now, we understand the makeup of the General Assembly and the possibility that that bill will not be called or not be voted on, he said, of a full FOID repeal. So there are other pieces of legislation that we feel will address these issues. Right now, an FOID cardholder can apply for renewal within 90 days of the card's expiration date. Windhorst said, due to long delays, this often creates a window between when an FOID card expires and when the cardholder gets a renewed card in the mail. He said, people who file in a timely manner but fall victim to that period can still possess guns legally. And a state police spokesperson said FOID cards should remain valid as long as they have submitted the renewal application prior to the expiration of their card. But Windhorst said gun owners falling victim to delays often have trouble purchasing guns or ammunition because an expired FOID is not accepted by gun dealers. And here is another state news story entitled Prescription Drug Price Cap Bill Stalls in Committee by Peter Hancock. Springfield. A bill that would allow the state to cap the prices of certain high-cost prescription drugs stalled in a House committee Wednesday amid stiff opposition from the pharmaceutical and insurance industries. It was the second straight year House Bill 3493 failed to pass out of the Prescription Drug Affordability and Accessibility Committee. Representative Will Guzzardi, Democrat of Chicago, who chairs the committee and is the bill's chief sponsor, called it frustrating. I think that the situation for patients who need their prescriptions in this state is dire and getting worse every day, and I would hope that my colleagues on both sides of the aisle could see that it's time for us to do something, Guzzardi said in an interview after the vote. Unfortunately, they seem to be more responsive to the pharmaceutical industry than to their constituents. The bill would set up a 5-member board that would have authority to conduct cost reviews and set upper payment limits for any prescription drug that crosses certain price thresholds. Those include brand name drugs that cost $30,000 or more for a year's supply or a course of treatment, or whose wholesale price increases by more than $3,000 in a 12-month period. Other thresholds would apply to biosimilar drugs, those that are highly similar to name brand drugs made from microorganisms found in plants or animals, as well as generic drugs. The upper payment limits would apply only to insurance policies regulated by the state. Those are primarily small group employer-based plans, individual family plans that people purchase through the Affordable Care Act exchange markets, and plans administered directly by the state, such as state employees' health insurance and the state Medicaid program. The limits would not apply to large self-insured plans that are governed by the Federal Employment Retirement Income Security Act, known as ERISA, or to Medicare Part D plans, which are regulated under federal law. Wednesday's hearing took place in a packed committee room where supporters of the bill, many affiliated with AARP, wore red t-shirts that read, "Stop RX Greed," and "Drugs Don't Work If People Can't Afford Them." Donna Cruz, an AARP volunteer, spoke of a time in her life when she became unable to work full-time because she could not afford her medications and was forced to move back in with her parents. "I became a boomerang child after years of being self-sufficient," she said. "The blow to my ego was enormous. Without my parents' help, however, I do not know how I could have survived." How can the greatest country in the world allow its citizens to suffer because of the high cost of prescription drugs, she asked later in her testimony. But Kip Snyder, Vice President for State Policy at the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, or PhRMA, argued that while there are individual examples of drug prices spiraling out of control, prices overall and the total amount spent on drugs nationwide have risen only modestly in recent years. Snyder said much of the problem stems from changes in the design of insurance policies that have led to patients paying higher deductibles and co-pays for their medications, and in some cases having to pay an entire year's deductible before their benefits kick in. In the end, the bill received only 8 yes votes on the 18-member committee, 2 votes short of the majority needed. Protect Our Care Illinois, a coalition of groups that had advocated for the bill, issued a statement saying its members were disappointed in the vote. The bill was officially listed as tabled under House rules, and Guzzardi said he would continue working on it in hopes of getting it through the House this year. "I think we have some more education to do with some members of this committee who may not fully understand how this board would work or why it's an effective tool to lower costs," he said. "So we'll continue doing that as well." We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for March 5th. Please stay tuned.